But you go ahead and be turning to Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30. We'll start there in just a minute. While you're turning there, I want to say I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you this morning. I hope the lesson that I prepared will be beneficial to us all. You may not have found a common theme in the songs that we sang this morning, but I appreciate Paul leading those songs. They do have something to do with the lesson, and hopefully by the end you'll see the reason for those songs, and I appreciate him doing that this morning. So as we're studying this morning, I hope you'll think about the songs that we sang. We'll work till Jesus comes, Rock of Ages, and then the other two that we just sang a few minutes ago. In general, generally speaking, we look for big things. We give more attention to larger, greater things. We're drawn to those type of things. And a lot of times we simply ignore the small things in life. And I'd like to think about Naaman for just a minute. You remember Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5. You know, he had leprosy and he wanted that healed, so he went to Elisha. And instead of Elisha performing some big grand thing that Naaman had expected of him, all he had to do was something very simple. And so like Naaman, we also look for great and extraordinary and big things. And again, we tend to push aside the smaller things. We consider them insignificant. And we don't think that they have a important lesson to teach. But I would suggest that big things don't always teach the greatest lessons. So if you're there in Proverbs chapter 30, God through Solomon points out four creatures on this earth that are very small, and we probably consider them very insignificant. But yet, Solomon says that they teach us great wisdom. So Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 24, there are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. And he mentions an ant, he mentions a rock badger, or your version may have hyrax or coney. We're going to use the term rock badger for our purposes this morning. He also mentions the locust and the spider. And so I hope to go through these this morning and find out what we can learn and what great wisdom that these creatures that are small and insignificant, what they can teach us, what wisdom we can learn from these creatures. So I hope that you will follow along with me in your Bible. I'm not going to use PowerPoint this morning, so I hope you'll be good Bereans. Take out your Bible, follow along, search the scriptures with me, and make sure the things are taught are so and are truth. So there in verse 25, he says, the ants are a people not very strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. So what does the ant teach? Well, first of all, let's ask the question, what are they preparing for? What does an ant prepare for? And I would suggest that the ants teach a diligent preparation. So what are they preparing for? Well, I had to do some research on all these, so I'm not an expert, but you can go and do your own research, but just to give you a general synopsis of what an ant does in its life. It's born, and it works. And that's all it does. It's born and it works. Now, different ants have different roles, but whatever their role is, an ant is always working. What are they working for? Well, an ant realizes that there's winter coming. Winter is coming and that ant is not going to be able to work. When winter comes, the temperature drops and so does the body of an ant. And so it's no longer able to do anything. And so it has to prepare for that. I would suggest that it's very hard to find an insect that's more industrious than an ant. You might can think of one, but either way, they stick out as a worker. None are born tired. They're not slackers. They're not shirkers. They're not, they don't take holidays. They don't take vacations. They work. You might say that's their motto, is to work. And so when we look at these, what do we see from an ant? What can we learn? You know, they don't go on strike. You know, you don't see little ants holding picket signs outside their anthills saying, I'm not going to work. They are an industrious insect that are continually preparing. So I want to look and see what we can learn from those things. And let's ask the question for ourselves, what are we preparing for? Well, like the ant, there is a harvest coming. Turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, let's look down in verse 30. Verse 24, Jesus is speaking a parable. It's the parable of the wheat and the tares. But I want to focus on verse 30. He says, "Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in the bundles and burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn." And so Jesus tells this parable, but at the end he says, why? Because there is a harvest coming. And there's going to be a result of that harvest. There's going to be two situations. You're going to be tares and they're going to be binded and burned. Or you're going to be gathered into the barn. And so we need to realize that there is a harvest coming. And of course we're talking about the second coming when the Lord returns. And so what is it that we need to be preparing for? Well, we need to be prepared for when the Lord returns. And I think it's important to get started early in that. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1, the writer says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" So it's important to get started in this work, in this preparation, early, when you're young. And to continue in that, in the summer of life, so to speak. You know, we look at the seasons, we look at a year, and we begin with spring, summer, fall, winter. And so we look at life that way, in essence. We begin with spring, and we continue with summer, and then we get to the later years, and then we come to the winter, or you might say night. And Jesus is going to say we're not able to work during the night. We'll talk about that later on. So we need to continue with that. Jeremiah chapter 8 and verse 20. Jeremiah simply states, "The harvest is past, the summer has ended, and we are not saved." So what's Jeremiah's conclusion? Well, the harvest has come, the summer has passed, and we're no longer saved, or we're not saved. We have no more opportunity. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But we need to continue to work during the summer of life so that we don't end up, like Jeremiah says, not saved because it's too late. Once the harvest has come, there'll be no more opportunity, as we just stated. Turn to the book of Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, we'll look at verses 1 through 10. Matthew 25, verse 1, "Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, 'Behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him.' Then all those virgins who were arose trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, 'No, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves.' And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming.'" And so what can we learn from these foolish virgins? They weren't ready. They were not prepared. It says in verse 9, "No, lest there should not be enough for any of us, and rather go buy and sell for yourselves, or buy for yourselves." And they went to buy, and the bridegroom came while they were gone. They were too busy going to buy oil, which they should have brought to begin with. They should have made the proper preparations, but yet they didn't. And so the bridegroom came, and they were left out. Also turn to Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13, we'll look at verses 24 through 28. Verse 24, Jesus says, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate, for many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. And once the master of the house has risen up and shut the door, and you begin to stand outside and knock on the door saying, Lord, Lord, open for us, and he will answer and say to you, I do not know you. Where are you from? And you will begin to say, we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught in our streets. But he will say, I tell you, I do not know you. Where are you from? Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity. So again, the idea of just not being prepared. They had their opportunities, but they didn't take advantage of them. And so they found themselves outside of that door. Also consider the parable of the vineyard in chapter 20 of Matthew. Matthew chapter 20. The parable of the vineyard. We won't take the time to read the entire parable. But it's about the master coming out and telling the workers to go into his vineyard to work. And at different intervals during the day, he would go and find new people and tell them to go work. And in particular, verse 6, he says, about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle and said to them, why have you been standing here idle all the day? And he asked the question, why are you idle? Why are you not doing anything? Go and work. And so we need to have that mindset as well, to not wait for someone to come and tell us to go work, but to go work while we have that opportunity. Not only is the harvest coming, but also winter, or we, as we said earlier, night. John chapter 9 and verse 4. John chapter 9 and verse 4, we mentioned it earlier, but Jesus says in chapter 9 and verse 4 of John that I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. And so there's going to be a time when we have no more opportunities. Galatians 6 and verse 10 also alludes to this same idea. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those of our household of faith. While we have opportunity, opportunity will not always be there. The harvest is coming, and so is winter, so is night. Notice we talked about earlier, an ant, he sleeps, or she sleeps during the winter. And I say she because if you do research on ants, most of them are females, and they're the ones that are doing the work. Just a side note. But they all sleep during the winter. And so they prepare for that. An ant does not store food where it may be robbed. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19 tells us that we are not to set aside treasures on earth where moth and rust and thieves can break in and steal, but rather store treasures in heaven where moth and rust and thieves cannot break in and steal. So what is it that we can learn from the ant? We learn diligent preparation. We learn to prepare for the harvest that is coming. When the Lord returns, will we be ready for that? Also, the last passage on this section, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 1. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 1. Actually, I think that should be 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. So if we store up our goods and treasures here on this earth, they're not going to do us any good when the harvest comes. But rather, if we store up treasures and goods in heaven, then we'll be prepared for when the harvest comes, and we'll have security in that. All right, so going back to Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30, looking at the next verse, verse 27, or verse 26, excuse me. The rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in the crags. Now, I don't know how much you know about a rock badger. I didn't know a whole lot. So I used the internet, which is a wonderful tool. And I found out that a rock badger is simply an ugly beaver or a groundhog. And if you see a picture of them, they're not very pretty. But it says that they they build their homes and their dwellings in rocks and in the sides of cliffs and just in wherever they can find, but it's always in rock. And they only venture out maybe about 100 feet, 150 feet from their dwelling. They don't go very far, and they're very skittish. And they're not meat eaters. They just find whatever vegetation that they can find. So they're very feeble. They're very helpless. They're not a very strong creature. So what can we learn from those creatures? What is it? What wisdom that we can gain from them? Well, if you think about nature in itself, it shows that rock is a sure refuge. And that's what the rock badger teaches, that there is a sure refuge. You know, we can look through the Bible and find times when people such as David, he found a cave for a refuge, for a dwelling, a way out from the elements, inside from the elements. Elijah is another example. He went in and found a cave and he got out of the elements. It was a refuge for the moment that they were in, for the time that they were in, somewhere that they needed security. And so that's what this creature teaches as a sure refuge. In the book of Psalms, chapter 104, Psalms chapter 104, verse 18, the high hills are for the wild goats, the cliffs are a refuge for the rock badgers. So again, a sure refuge is what we're looking at here. So we ask the question, what about our rock? What about our refuge? What about our security? Well, let's take, first of all, look at a few things that our refuge is not. Turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 28. Isaiah chapter 28. Our refuge is not in lies. Isaiah chapter 28, verse 15, because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with Sheol we are in agreement. When the overflowing scourge passes through, it will not come to us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood we have hidden ourselves. You know, if we look at the world around us, many people have made their refuge and their security in lies. Whether it's lies about their own life, whether it's lies about the gospel, that's where they have put their refuge, their security. And we don't do that. That's not where our refuge is. Also, it's not in ourselves. Our refuge is not ourselves. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Look at verse 9. 2 Corinthians 1 verse 9. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. If we put our security, if we put our refuge in ourselves, then that's going to lead to death. And then thirdly, our refuge is not in wealth. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17, which we just read from a moment ago. 1 Timothy 6 verse 17, we'll read it one more time. Our refuge is not in wealth. Again, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Those three things are not our refuge. I'll tell you what our refuge is, though. That is God. And our rock is Jesus Christ. I'd like to look at several passages now pointing to that. Isaiah, and I'll probably go through these fairly quickly, but there, let's look at them, if you will. Isaiah chapter 28. All these verses that we're about to read point to Jesus as our rock. Isaiah chapter 28 and verse 16. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion a stone for a foundation, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. Whoever believes will not act hastily. Now turn to the book of Acts, chapter 4. The book of Acts, chapter 4, we'll look at verses 10 and 11. Let it be known to you all and to all the people of Israel that by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, by this man stands here before you whole. This is the stone which was rejected by you builders, which has become the chief cornerstone. Also in Ephesians chapter 2 and in verse 20. Ephesians chapter 2 and in verse 20. Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. And finally, in 1 Peter chapter 2, we won't turn over and read it, but it also references Jesus as the chief cornerstone. Notice also that I mentioned earlier, God is our refuge. Turn to the book of Psalms again. Psalms chapter 94. We'll look at three verses from the book of Psalms. Psalm 94, verse 22. But the Lord has been my defense and my God, the rock of my refuge. Also in chapter 9 of Psalm. Psalm 9 and verse 9. The Lord also will be a refuge for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. And then finally in chapter 18 of Psalm and verse 2. Psalm chapter 18 and verse 2. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. And so as we think about a rock badger out of his dwelling, out of his cave or his place among the rocks, is helpless and feeble. We too are helpless and feeble without God and without Jesus Christ. They are our rock. They are our refuge. They are our security. And we are in the same situation as a rock badger without God. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 12, as we read, I think we mentioned this earlier. We'll look at it just one more time. Ephesians chapter 2 and in verse 12. That at the time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in this world. So without God, without Christ, we have no hope. Just like that rock badger who's out from his, among his rocks, among his cave, he has no hope of security, of a dwelling without that there. If you look back at the children of Israel in the Old Testament and look at all the times that God give them security, give them a refuge. Without Him, they would have been helpless. All the times that He provided for them. We think of the time that He provided manna, that He provided water on numerous occasions. When He helped them take over the land of Canaan. All those times He provided that help and that security. And we see what they did in return for Him. Or do we find ourselves in that same situation? Or do we accept God? Do we take hold of that refuge and that security and hide ourselves among that as we sang this morning? If only we could hide ourselves in the rock that is Jesus Christ and seek God as our refuge, we will find security. That's part of putting our treasures in heaven. Going back to Proverbs chapter 30 again. Looking at the next verse, verse 27. The locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. So what does the locust teach? They teach unity and cooperation. If you think about the locusts from the plagues in the book of Exodus, when God sent the plagues on the land of Egypt, you know, the locusts, they all came together for one purpose. Of course, it was God's purpose. But they all worked together and they fulfilled that purpose that God had for them. Could you imagine what it would have been like if the locusts had come together and then they just all started fighting one another? They never fulfill the purpose that God has sent them. Could you imagine what that would have been like? Well, if we look at them and we look at their example, they have no king, they have no ruler over them. And yet they can cooperate. So how much more should we be able to cooperate as Christians, as a church, with Jesus as our King. Turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 12. Matthew, chapter 12. Let's look at verse 25. Jesus says, "Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself will not stand." Do you think if the locusts had not been in unity and in cooperation with one another, that God's purpose would have been fulfilled? Just like if we're not unified together, if we're not working together, will we fulfill God's purpose? I dare say that if we aren't unified, if we're not standing together, then we will, just like Jesus said, we will not stand. We are a house divided against itself. Turn to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, or excuse me, chapter 1 and verse 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 13. Paul asked the question there, is Christ divided? Well, of course not. And neither should we be. As a church, as a Christian, working together to fulfill God's purpose, neither should we be divided. You know, there is strength in unity. You've seen the illustration as a kid, or well, I did as a kid, when maybe in a classroom or something, the teacher wanted to express this idea, and so they had a group of pencils together, had a rubber band around them, and they said, "Here, take this and try to break them in half." Of course, we'd all try to break them in half. But then she'd take one out and hand it to you and break it in half. Sure enough, it'd break in half pretty quickly. The idea was that there's strength in numbers. There's strength in unity. And Jesus prayed for that. John chapter 17, let's look at his prayer. John chapter 17, verses 21 through 23. John chapter 17. Actually, let's back up to verse 20. "I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them, that they may be one just as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that we may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them as you have loved me." What a great encouragement it is to know that Christ prayed that, even for us, that we should be unified together. And of course, we go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10, and Paul says that we are to speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among us. Why is that? So that we can be perfectly joined together in the same mind and then the same judgment. One other passage along this line, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, also speaks to the strength and unity. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, looking at verses 9 and 10, the writer says, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor." Verse 10, "For if they fall, one will lift the other up. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him." So what do the locusts teach? They teach unity and cooperation. And it takes each one of us individually to have an attitude of working together with one another to fulfill God's purposes. Finally, going back to Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30, looking at verse 28. "The spider skillfully grasped with his hands, and it is in kings' palaces." Now, I am all for smashing spiders. I just don't like them. And I dare say there are many of you probably that do not like spiders. And if they're in my house, they are definitely going to get smashed. But let me give you an example. One time, there was a Bradford pear tree outside of one of the houses we lived in. And one night I went out and I ran into a spider web. I thought, oh no, please get it off of me. It didn't land on me, and I didn't mess up the web. In fact, what I saw was very, very interesting. The spider climbed up, And he climbed down, and then he went around in a circle. And I thought, what in the world is this thing doing? And sure enough, that spider was building a web. And just, I stood there and watched, and as much as I don't like spiders, I was fascinated. And I stood there and watched, and he just went round and round and round, and pretty soon, for too long, there was a web that was about this big. Now, I say all that to ask the question, what does a spider teach? A spider teaches fearless labor and perseverance. You know, a spider is not afraid of a task. If you mess up a spider's web, it is bound to be there. Maybe within the next few hours, maybe the next day. Either way, it's going to recreate that web. Matthew 25 and verse 25. Looking at the parable of the talents. And again, we won't take the time to read all of the parable, but you're familiar with it. You had the man with the five, with the three, and with the two, and the man with the one. And in verse 25, what does this man say after the master has come to receive back what it says? He says in verse 25, I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. Are we afraid to use our talents? Are we afraid to use what God has given us? Are we afraid to work? Are we afraid to persevere? You know, a spider, if it fails, it tries again. I'd like to share with you the story of King Bruce of Scotland. Many of you may be familiar with it. There's several different versions of it. I'll just tell you the one that I know. But King Bruce of Scotland went and fought the English armies 6 times and lost every time. And so he was in desperation. He went into his tent or cave, whatever the story goes, and he saw a spider. And that spider was building a web. And the story goes that he sat and watched it, and that spider was trying to create a web from one side to the other. And that spider tried 6 times to get that web to stick and failed 6 times. But on the 7th time, that spider swung and stuck that thread, and he was able to continue building that web. And so that give, what was his name? Bruce, King Bruce, yeah. That give him the motivation to go and try to defeat the English fight him a 7th time and end up defeating them. Now what does that teach us? What about our perseverance and what about our courage? What can we learn from that? Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, Jesus is teaching here who we should fear. In verse 28, he says, do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. But rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So first of all, let's focus on who we're serving. And let's focus on who we're trying to please. Because the people around us, they can kill our body, but they can't kill our soul. God, on the other hand, he can destroy both of those things. So first of all, let's focus on who we are fearing, who we are respecting. Then turn to Matthew chapter 24. Look at verses 12 and 13. Matthew 24, verse 12, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. You know, we live in a world that is very hard sometimes not to fear what people think about us and what they may say about us. But whatever the case, we need to persevere. We need to have courage and remember who we serve. Also, 1 Corinthians in chapter 9. Look at verse 24. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, looking at verse 24. Paul says, do you not know that those who run a race all run, but one receives the prize? Notice what he says, run in such a way that you may obtain it. And then in chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians and verse 13, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, and be strong. So what does the spider teach again? A fearless labor and perseverance. Don't worry about what other people might think, what other people might say. God is the one that matters. He is the one that can destroy our soul and our body. So it's Him that we should be concerned about. So, as we conclude our lesson this morning, let's go back over what we've talked about. We looked at the ant, and what does the ant teach? Diligent in preparation. So we need to take advantage of the opportunities while we have them. Work, for the night is coming, as we sang this morning. What about the rock badgers? What do they teach? A sure refuge. Take refuge in the rock of ages. Again, as we sang this morning. Jesus Christ and God our Father is our rock and our refuge. The locusts, what do they teach? Unity and cooperation. We need to work together to fulfill God's purpose. Work together with one another. We need to be unified and speak the same things so that we can be perfectly joined together, not divided. And finally, the spider, what does he teach? To persevere until the end so that we can gain that reward, which is ours. So I might ask this morning, are you working for the night is coming? Are you working and are you preparing for the harvest that is coming? You may have been a Christian for several years and you may have started out early working and you've slacked. Why have you slacked? Why have you shirked the work that the Lord has given to us? One of the verses that I didn't read that I had down mentioned that it was in Proverbs. It said, go to the ant, you sluggard, and look at her ways. Look how she prepares. Don't be lazy. Be diligent in your preparation, for the harvest comes and the night is coming when no one can work. No more opportunities. If you're not a Christian this morning, I would point you back to the parable of the vineyard where the master says, why are you idle? Why are you standing here idle all the day? There is work to be done. Why not go and get started in that work? Why put it off any longer? Again, we read from the passage in Ecclesiastes, start from an early age, but it's never too late to start. Whether you're 10 years old, whether you're 90 years old, it's never too late to start. So why not take advantage of that? If we can help you in a way this morning, why don't you come and we stand and sing?